For our morning meditations, I want you to think with me about this passage from Moffat's translation. Nothing outside a man can defile him by entering him. It is what comes from him that defiles him. In other words, your reactions to life determine the result. Nothing from without you can hurt you. If your reactions are right. It's a tremendous truth, if it is true, because life is hitting us pretty hard these days. It's getting behind our armor and getting us at places where we're not inwardly protected. And some are caving in regard to the world situation. Jesus said here that the thing that happens to you from without is important, but not all decisive. The thing that is decisive is the thing that happens from within. Take this man Christ himself. Things happened to him pretty fast and furious and sometimes cruelly. They struck him. But he had a way of turning the worst into the best. For instance, he went into the wilderness for 40 days to be tempted. At the end of that 40 days, the account says that he emerged full of the power of the Spirit. He went into the wilderness full of the Spirit. He emerged from the wilderness in the power of the Spirit. Mere fullness turned to power under temptation. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. The temptation came upon him to weaken him. Actually, what happened was the strengthening of him. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. One day they threw a criticism upon him to break him. They said he eats with publicans and sinners because he's like them. It was an attempt to take away his good name. Not an easy thing to bear. But Jesus didn't bear it, he used it. He turned to them and said, which of you shall have 100 sheep? Then he gives the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. The revelation of the seeking redemptive God came through those three parables. Where did those parables come from? They came out of an unjust attempt to take away his good name. He turns that thing back into a revelation of the seeking redemptive God. In other words, not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. Take the cross. We often say Jesus bears the cross or bore the cross, which is quite true. But Jesus didn't really bear the cross, he used it. The cross was sin, pure, unadulterated sin. And he turns it into the healing of sin. The cross was hate. And he turned it back as a revelation of love. The cross was life speaking its darkest, its cruelest, its most awful word. And Jesus turns it back into God speaking his most redemptive word. In other words, not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. But you say, that's Jesus. He can do it. We can't. But that's exactly what we can do. Take, for instance, Paul and the apostles. They didn't bear trouble. They used it. They took it up into the purpose of their lives and transmuted it. They made their impediments into instruments, their Calvaries into Easter mornings. They didn't bear trouble. They used it. For instance, once I read to Mahatma Gandhi the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And when I got through, there were tears in his eyes. And he said, oh, how beautiful, beautiful. But where did that poem on love come from? It came out of criticism. He had wept with those Corinthians. And he rejoiced with them. And they turned upon him and said his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible and he's not a real apostle. Not an easy thing when you serve people and they turn upon you in criticism. But Paul didn't bear that. He used it. He sat down and began to write a letter. And he dipped his pen in the blood of his broken heart and began to write of love. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love is not provoked even at what you're doing. Love never faileth. Where did that come from? Out of injustice. He turns it back into a poem of love. He takes his pain and turns it into a paean. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. The most wonderful leper asylum in India was set up by a man and his wife who lost an only child through leprosy. They might have said, well, God isn't good, he doesn't care. Our child's been taken away when we were missionaries and serving him. But they didn't. They said, we'll see what we can do for other lepers. And they set up this marvelous leper home to which tens of thousands of lepers have gone. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. The most wonderful tuberculosis sanatorium of India was set up by a man, a missionary, who himself had tuberculosis. While he was seeking health for himself, he said, I'll see what I can do for other tubercular patients. They set up that marvelous Madhanapali home. Tens of thousands have gone through that institution. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. The most wonderful orphan asylum in India was set up by a man and his wife who lost all six children at once. A hillside slipped away and buried all six children at once. Mr. and Mrs. Lee might have curled their lips and wanted to curse God and die. They were missionaries, and this happened to them. Why? But they didn't. Mrs. Lee came to the commemoration service without a tear. They talked about the matter. They said, well, our home's been broken up. We'll see what we can do for homeless children. They reached out in the streets of Calcutta and brought in the waif, the orphan, the abandoned children. And soon they had not six, but 300 children in that marvelous home. And they've had them there for over 40 years. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. A lesser home is broken up and they set up a bigger. You smite them, they sing. That is mastery. And I've watched it happen here today in America. I was out in a village some time ago where a woman who'd been on her bed for 44 straight years was the most triumphant soul I've ever seen. She was as gay at 72 as a 25-year-old, gayer than most 25-year-olds I know. She had three diseases, any one of which should have killed a normal person. But she was one of those unkillable kinds. She laughingly said, you know, these different disease germs got to fighting each other down on the inside of me. And as they fought each other, they forgot all about me. And I lived on. The doctor said there was probably something in it. She lies upon her bed and makes wonderful butterfly pendants and all sorts of gifts. She set up a gift shop. Her bed is her workshop, lying prone upon her back. She makes all sorts of beautiful things. Soon she was paying enough money to pay income tax, making enough money to pay income tax. And she laughingly said, you know, I sent off my first check to the government to pay my income tax. I sent it off with my love. I tell you, when you can pay your income tax with your love, you're getting somewhere, aren't you? A magazine gave her $100 for the story of her gift shop and then gave her $1,000 for the best true story of the year. An American publisher, looking around for the lives of great Americans, fastened upon this life. They said, well, here's a great American. And they got her to write her autobiography. She has 100,000 words written, telling how to master life, in spite of. The bedpost upon which I lean was worn down by people coming in, young and old, leaning upon that bedpost and telling this invalid their troubles. In the alchemy of her goodwill, she changed their sorrows into songs, their burdens into blessings. And they go away feeling that they've met God in this life. I asked her one day, I said, "What is your great word this year?" And she said, "You know what? My great word is watch care. God's watch care." I said to myself, "Watch care? Then why doesn't God heal her if he watches over her?" And then I was reminded that God heals in many ways, at least one of seven ways. First, through the physician. Second, through the surgeon. Third, through mental suggestion. Fourth, through climate. Fifth, through deliverance from underlying fears, worries, resentments, self-centeredness and guilts which produce disease. Sixth, through the direct operation of the Spirit of God upon our bodies. And seventh, through the final cure, the resurrection. Sometimes he'll heal in one or the other of these ways. But sometimes, he says to us, "I'll trust you with this suffering until the final cure in the resurrection." And God is watching over her spirit and saying to her, "I'm going to keep it sound and able to meet every adversity until the final cure in the resurrection." God will either cure us now or give us power to use the suffering, the infirmity, until the final cure in the resurrection. But he's going to cure. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. Here is a masterful way to live. Professor James says this active, positive dealing with sorrow gives a new dimension to life. It does. Because you can take the worst and turn it into the best. Like the lotus flower that reaches down into the muck and mire and takes up the muck and mire into the purpose of its life and transmutes it into the beauty of the lotus flower. So you can lay hold on the raw materials of human living, some of it just, some of it unjust, some of it pleasurable, some of it painful. And you can take it up into the purpose of your life and transmute it into character, into achievement, into victory. I know a girl who has a paralysis on one side of her face. It's pulled her mouth all out of shape. She's hideous when you first look at her. You'd say to yourself, that girl's beaten. On the contrary, she's one of the most useful persons I know, and a student leader. One of the most influential student leaders in that section of the country. You look at her for the first time and say, how ugly. Then you look at her again, you say, how beautiful. She's mastered that ugliness and made it into beauty. She goes straight on and uses that twisted face for the kingdom of God. And students forget about her face and remember her character, her love, her positive goodwill, her ability. The doctor said, we think we can straighten that face of yours by plastic surgery. She said, "I'm grateful, but it's all right. I needn't bear this, I can use it." She's using it. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. The Christian then is unbeatable, unbreakable. He knows how to live sometimes on account of. If not, then in spite of his found the way to live in every conceivable circumstance. Not what happens to you, but what you do with it after it does happen determines the result. God bless you and give you that secret. For when you know that way to live, you can live in spite of.